He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Baby, you can drive my car.
Good morning to our listeners for this week's version of Car Keys with Jada Markin, Mike Flint, and Robin Leach. Robin Leach is speaking. It is in the month of May in 2025 that this show was done, or is being done, and there are lots of things going on in the automotive industry coming forth and that are going to come forth with some of the states in which we are listened to, I hope more than Connecticut, maybe, because of a law about improving or increasing the sales of zero-emission vehicles mandated by California's law, which it goes into effect, I believe, starting next year. Connecticut is not yet in that group of states, but it's going to change the way when it gets to Connecticut, but in Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, Delaware, and several other states, you will be able to look for cars to purchase in these coming years and in these coming states. Jay, I don't know whether you know a lot about it. I don't know too much about it, but I'm reading an article as we do this show for our listeners. And what's going to happen is that where you now can go to new car dealers and see not only their own makes in the lots and every model that they make available, they're going to be models that are going to disappear from dealers' lots, or they're going to be numerically reduced levels of those vehicles and more higher levels of vehicles that meet the zero emission requirements that are forthcoming, unless somehow they get redone by either the federal government or the state governments.
I'm not sure I follow. So what are the rules and laws? I haven't seen anything.
Well, I haven't been able to read the article in full as we are doing this show for our listeners. But what's going to happen is the automakers must start complying, and I'm reading the paragraph by quote, this year with the Advanced Clean Cars 2 regulation adopted in 2022 by the California Air Resources Board, known as CARB, C-A-R-B. And what it basically says that manufacturers and states are going to have to start limiting what cars they can offer to buyers in these dealers' lots to those that are mandated to be zero-emission vehicles. And that means electric. That does not necessarily mean hybrid, because hybrids are not totally electric. It's too early for us to get really excited about that for our listeners, but any listeners who want to pay attention and aren't going to buy cars for some years coming may want to rethink it. If they want to learn more about it, they can find out probably online so they can make their buying purchases. But I don't know what it's really going to do. It's going to probably curb the production of some car lines that aren't electrified or converted to electric vehicles to become electrified by these years. And it's a phased-in program, which I believe starts next year in some states, in 2027 in other states. And I noted only that Connecticut was absent, unless I missed it, in both the lists that I have been reading up prior to coming online to do the show.
I haven't read anything on the subject.
Okay, well, I think we can leave that, leave it for our listeners to think about what I have said so far and go on to other things. And you have a topic which I'm ready to discuss with you.
If you've read the article too, I mean, there's obviously a bunch of them. The Stellantis group, and there was this article in
Detroit Free Press. Is that the one?
The Detroit Free Press. About the different brands that compose the Stellantis group, and which ones may or may not survive in the future, and what this writer's opinion was. And to remind our listeners, the Stellantis group is Chrysler in the U.S., Peugeot Alliance in mostly Europe. So the various brands.
Maserati
we have,
also, right?
Excuse me. What's that?
Don't they own Maserati as well?
Yeah, yeah. So in
Alfa
the Italian, the Fiat part of the group, you have obviously Fiat, Lancia, Alfa Romeo, and Maserati. And this, so I've looked a little bit at the sales within the group, and you know, this guy was talking about keeping. Oh, the Jeep was the crown jewel of the brand. Well,
yeah.
Jeep accounts for 15% of Stellantis sales. Ram trucks account for 15%. Peugeot and Fiat both account for about 20%. So they, interestingly,
nationwide,
Fiat,
worldwide though for those
worldwide,
two, right?
Yes. Yes.
Not
the problem
US.
I see with Stellantis is all of these brands are kind of local yokel brands. You know, Jeep and Ram sell very well in the U.S., but they are pretty much non-existent in other parts of the world. Likewise, Peugeot is very strong in France and Europe and hasn't, you know, we haven't seen a Peugeot car in this country in, I don't know, 30 years or so.
40, with, I
and,
believe.
And then Fiat is very strong in Italy, not even that strong in the rest of Europe. And comes and goes when it comes to the U.S. market.
Okay.
And so I don't know, you know, I don't know what you think, but I think the Stellantis group is facing some serious challenges.
Well, when you're ready to let me chime in, I will chime in. I guess the silence lets me chime in. Being current in control of four Jeep Cherokees ownership control, the banks are, but I my family has
uses
four
them.
Now running, and finding them very satisfactory vehicles. I have said on previous shows over the years that I've owned these vehicles, which started in 2014. I have found for my own personal use them to be excellently designed vehicles. They are very reliable. This is a model that Stellantis/Jeep, I think, made a egregious error in stopping production of in late 2023. Although a couple of there are a few 2024 versions were produced before the plant was closed down. I don't know what I think it was in Ohio. It doesn't matter. And I see these vehicles all over the road because there were a lot of them sold, and there are a lot of them on the road because I think people other than me like them as well.
Yeah,
but it was a well-designed vehicle, which I think was erroneously taken off their list. You talk about their and they why they kept the Renegade, which is now gone, and the Compass, which is, well, the Renegade is also gone and was gone before, I think, 2022 or 3, which was built in Italy and imported here. And the Compass, which has sort of been a rather poor substitute, in my view, for the missing Jeep Cherokee.
Okay,
they have
so
improved.
Hold on for a second.
Okay.
You're talking about the past. I'm talking about the future. Where does
right.
Jeep go from
I
here?
Right. I understand that. Jeep Cherokee is supposed to be coming back. We'll see what
so
it is.
In the meantime, we have the Wrangler, we have the
correct.
Grand Cherokee, and we have the
Grand Wagoneer.
The Wagoneer.
Right.
And the reality is, you know, Jeep. Yeah, it's a brand. It's a symbol, but most of their vehicles are looking more and more like other vehicles. And the one that stands out, the Wrangler, is being challenged by the Bronco.
Correct.
Even though you know, Jeep sells more Wranglers than Ford sells Broncos, Jeep has taken a hit with the Bronco coming on the market. Bronco
yes.
being the Ford Bronco.
That is true, and it is. There was an article elsewhere, Jay, you may or may not have caught a glimpse of it, that said that based on probably quite a reduction in Jeep Wrangler sales, the sales of Bronco, the Bronco were approaching being almost equal to them on a monthly basis in the current year we are seeing right now. So Bronco is definitely putting a dent in the Wranglers, which had exclusivity in a lineup of such vehicles for years, ever since the Bronco which was last really known in the size range that it's now currently produced in 65. And I forget when they started enlarging them, but they started enlarging them along, and they matched the Chevy Blazer line for line. But they grew out; they grew to an outsize size of vehicle before they stopped producing those.
So last century. My bigger point, I guess, is that a brand or model is only as good as the current vehicle is.
That is correct.
Or you start losing that capital of sympathy, or people just stop losing interest in a model or a brand, and then sometimes they come back. Like Ford, you know, makes a comeback with the Bronco 30 years after it dropped the nameplate. But moving forward, you know that. These are niche markets, and where do they go with volume? And I don't see anything in Stellantis' group that has, you know, real volume potential. And so they're, you know, back to this article in the Detroit Free Press.
Yes.
You know, this journalist was talking about dropping Lancia. Sure. DS. Sure. What do you do with Alfa Romeo? What do you do with Maserati? He was suggesting they'd be dropped too. But I think Stellantis' biggest problem is that they have these brands that sell in certain markets and are totally non-existent in others. And I don't think that problem is going to be solved anytime soon.
Well, I think you're right. But I think it's more, in my opinion, based on what I know about both the Wrangler brand itself and the Bronco brand, is that they have limited national interest use and purchase from the standpoint because mostly I think their image is more narrow than the image of SUV vehicles and more standard practical utility designs of vehicles, such as the GM and Ford Navigator and
Let me move on and try to not be so doom and gloom.
Yeah.
Which we know is not easy for me. But yesterday I was talking with somebody who was looking at purchasing a large hybrid SUV, and this person was going to be moving to Florida, but spending 2 or 3 months a year in Maine, and I think I managed to talk this person out of getting a hybrid and going full electric. Go big or go home.
Full electric, though, you talked him into it as opposed to the reverse. Once he gets to the destination states that he might be going to during the course of any year, that would be the only going from one location to the other would be the only long-distance cruise in the all-electric, which we know is range-limited before you have to stop. And right now you have to stop and wait at least 30 minutes before you can go significantly on to the next charging port, but it's rapidly improving in that department. As opposed to the hybrid version, because I know people who absolutely love, for an example, the Toyota Highlander Hybrid, and they didn't even know about them until they started driving to Florida and purchased one, and now that's their go-to vehicle as opposed to the full electric version of it. Well, there isn't a full electric version of any of Toyota's cars right now except for the Prius, I believe, the plug-in Prius.
No, there's the one they just changed the name on, BVE4 or whatever.
That's not a full utility vehicle. Niche vehicles, at least it was in the old BZV4 size.
So
back to your story, because that's a very interesting thing you talked somebody into instead of what I just talked about, which was reverse.
I was making the point of why if you're going to, you know, if you want to do good or if you believe in electric, you know, propulsion, why would you carry around an engine everywhere you go? Might as well just go full electric. And the fact of the matter is, going from up and down the East Coast with an electric vehicle is not really a problem. And I know we've had this discussion before, but if you're traveling with, and in this case, this person would be traveling with kids, you're not going 500 miles between stops, and when you stop, kids are going to run around. So going 250 and 300 miles between stops and taking 20, 25 minutes or even 30 minutes, to stretch your legs and snack and whatever, is not a big deal. And, you know, even in Maine, they have electric power, I'm pretty sure. And I'm sure you can find charging stations, or you can have a charging station wherever you're going to be, you know,
well,
spending your time.
I would agree with you, Jay, on most of what you're saying. The charging station accessibility is getting better all the time. It's still not perfect by any means, but for a family of, let's say a family of four to six, which has one of these large three-row SUVs and they want to be electric, the other thing to take into some account right now, and I don't know how you prejudge this when you're going to decide to purchase one of these, but maybe our listeners are listening and somebody might think the way you've talked your person into. You still have the other situation. When you load these all full electric vehicles up with the two to four kids, the adults in the front, presumably, and the luggage that you have to go with your Thule racks on top and the limited probably rear cargo space, thus you've got your stuff between the two locations already pre-located, so you just have to drive the person part of the component between the two locations, is another range-reducing situation. We don't want to talk. I know you don't want to talk too much about that, but I know a friend of mine has two electric vehicles, has gone all electric in their family of two right now. Their children are older now, and they have a Bolt and they have a Rivian, and they're about to go cross country in the Rivian, and they're looking forward to it. But right now they go from here to the Adirondacks in the Rivian, but they also have towed a boat between here and the Adirondacks, and the towing the boat is the major upsetting part of their trip. They cannot get from
here to the Adirondack destination
pulling the boat in one charge.
Okay, let me stop you right there because
okay.
I don't care what you're towing with. I have a diesel vehicle.
Yes, it's not electric.
30 miles to the gallon, and when I tow a car trailer behind it, it gets exactly half of that if I'm lucky. This is a vehicle. It's a diesel engine. It's designed for towing.
We have talked about this, Jay.
Your range goes down when you're towing
yes,
something.
Yes, Jay. And you know what? It doesn't take you 150 miles to get to the next diesel station to fill up, and then it takes you 5 minutes to fill up to go the next. Whereas this isn't happening in the electric world yet. Okay. Enough said.
Okay. Moving on.
Yes. I've read an article in Auto Week, which is coming out, and let's talk about car colors for a minute. I don't know what you like about car colors, but I have found overall the car color selection in big dealer lots is often limited to white, silver, and black. And maybe there'll be a red example of a car. The one dealership between my daily routes now is the what is that Mercedes dealer on the way to New York on the left? It's undergoing great renovation with new ownership, and you'll see the lineup of the Mercedes vehicles in there, and you see lineups of black and white, and maybe you're lucky enough in the middle to see a red or blue one or something there. Toyota is about to upend the boring color list in their Toyota Tacoma line or truck lines with a lineup in 2026, I think, of colors that are going to be bright and cheerful, in my view. What do you think about colors in cars in general?
Well, I think that if you don't wash your cars pretty often, silver is always the go-to color because it's the one that you see the dirt the least on. It's the most forgiving as far as scratches
white.
Are concerned.
Yeah.
And out of my four vehicles, two are silver and two are white. So, you know, I didn't really pick those colors because most of these vehicles are used vehicles. So, people tend to be conservative when it comes to car colors. And those who are not you know, stick out, and some people like to stick out, and some people don't. The reality is, you know, shades of gray sell, and, you know, bright red, bright green does not. In the 70s, when I was a kid in Europe, you would see, in Germany particularly, you would see these bright green, orange, yellow cars, and that was because insurance companies would give you a rebate if you had a bright-colored car, because statistically, they would be less involved in car crashes. I don't know if that's still true. It may be. Other people may think, well, if I stick out in the crowd, you know, that radar...
I was going to bring that up.
At the end of the straight line might be finding me more easily in the crowd if I'm driving a red car than if I'm driving a black or silver car. You know, there's a lot of different factors. When you come to sell your car, it is easier to sell if you, you know, have a gray or silver car than if it is bright red. But I think it's great that people like bold colors.
Okay. Maybe that's enough on that topic.
I can tell you more, you know.
Well, I heard one...
colors.
Was there a version of the color thing being distinctive for potential radar? Was that the red color? If you had they were visible, or you got into more accidents, something like that. There are things associated with colors and driving accidents and possibly ticket situations, but I don't really know what they are.
If you drive Corvette, you're going to stick out on 684.
Yes, that's right.
We once had the bright green that you're talking about, and what I liked about it was easy to find in the parking lot.
I remember.
Good point,
Mike.
That
car.
Yeah, it was a nice little car.
Now you can find your car in the parking lot by pushing the alarm button your key fob.
Well, yeah.
And let the horn start beeping.
Still got to follow the horn and see the lights flashing because, yeah, our one after the green machine left, we now have a black one. So finding it in the parking lot is so many of them look totally alike. It's one of the things that frustrates me in cars is this. Each model year, they all seem to be just doing the same thing with a slight deviation here or there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I like my bright green for the fact that you could find it easily.
Unless Jay wants to have another topic, I want to have a topic that's recently crossed my radar in that I've recently had some noises coming from the front end of two of my Cherokees, which I just finished telling everybody I loved.
Yeah,
they were little squealing noises, like scraping noises. And they were from the front ends. And I have taken both of them in to the dealership for in-between oil changes for a look at. And both have come back with the following relatively similar comments about being caused by a distinct amount, a lot of rust on the brake systems of the front ends of both the Jeeps. And then there was and it was caused by a connector, some kind of connector in the front braking system of both of them that was scraping on discs. But they brought me out to look at the situation, and what was noted in both of them was the great amount of rust that has occurred to the back sides of the rotors and the disc systems, and it's caused by, I guess, the stuff we drive through in the wintertime, and that are put on the roads to melt the snow. And this comes down to the point of what should you do to try to minimize this situation.
The only
thing that I can say to the listeners is you should think about probably going through car washes or going to places where you can go to the underbody sides of these vehicles. It doesn't matter whether it's a Jeep or a Chevy or a Ford or whatever. If you're driving in the winter, you have a lot of corrosive stuff that's put on the roads. It's going to corrode anything that's metal and that it can attack. And you don't see any of these places on your car when you drive it because you can't get under the car to see what I saw this time around when I went and visited the Jeep dealership recently. Well,
the stuff they're putting on, it sticks. That's another big issue with that. Unlike stuff we've had before, the environmental consciousness, this stuff sticks to the undercarriage. So literally, when you're going out every day and driving on it, you should damn near take your car in and blow the undercarriage out every day.
Okay, yeah. Good point, Mike, for our listeners to listen to. Also, Connecticut. I think there's still, and even New York, I think, what is that stuff you see, six white streaks on the road before a storm even hits that they've laid on the road, and does that actually turn, it dries, because it doesn't react until there's moisture, which in the form of falling snow. Does that stuff get thrown up under the car? What?
We're in the middle of the month of May.
I know, but you know what? It's a topic that... You know, somebody will remember next November.
We've had big snowstorms in May before.
Yes, I know. Anyways, the whole point is you should wash the undercarriage of your car as often as possible if you want to lengthen the life of the car in places where you don't normally see what's going on if you don't. Okay?
Thank you for that.
Instead of a point of safety, that's probably a point of maintenance in the future.
That's right. That's part of your maintenance, to wash your car often.
I don't know whether we have any new safety things to sell, but we should probably keep reminding drivers to please use your signal lights, turn signals more than anybody's doing now. It's really maddening to not know which way a car is going when you're at a divided intersection or going along where somebody's going slowly, maybe looking for the driveway to turn into, to turn off the road, or whatever you're doing.
So I want to talk about I've talked about it before, but
okay, talk
a maintenance and safety thing.
Yep.
A lot of us and dealerships and repair shops will, you know, be quick to point out that you need new brakes on your car, and people,
right.
You know, jump and spend the money. And but what we tend to forget is shock absorbers. And shock absorbers, if your car is pushing 100,000 miles. Or more, or sometimes less, shock absorbers start being less efficient, and they affect
the handling
of the car, the braking capability of the car, in ways that are not so obvious because these shocks deteriorate, you know,
very slowly.
So you may be used to the car, you know, you're adapting and getting used to the fact that the car is less efficient. And then all of a sudden you put new shocks on, and it's like you have a whole new car. And few shops really point that out. We don't have any safety inspection anymore. So it's not unusual, Jay, for me to see cars on the road that are wobbling all over the place.
Right.
And anyway, shocks.
Shocks
safety.
Should be checked. I don't know really how you check it because it's hard to push down and see how your car rebounds or not.
Shops have equipment
for the average user.
You know, certain shops have equipment for that.
Okay.
And again, if you have 80 to 100,000 miles of your car and your shocks have never been changed, just change them.
Okay.
It's called preventive maintenance.
Okay.
Along with your tires.
All right.
Correct.
Time check?
Which reminds me, my car has 125,000 miles. Maybe I should change the shocks.
There you go. And the tires are real important in any weather because you have less and less control as that tire gets thinner and thinner
the
down
goes
there.
Goes thinner.
And that
That's
also
exactly right.
Cuts down
especially
on
in rainstorms. And we have our heavy rainstorm season. Thank you, Mike and Jay, for reminding me it's not winter. you know, treadless tires will not help you steer the car in a corner or if you get into a slide because they have nothing to grip onto. Because there's nothing dispersing the water that's going under the tires, so you're in effect aquaplaning.
It causes you to have your gas mileage to be reduced too in gasoline cars. I don't know how the electrics hold up under thin tires, but
okay. I think until next week, we are Car Keys with Jay, Mike, and Robin.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.